10. We spend the night at Uncle Carlos's house because the riot started again as soon as the sun went down. Somehow the store got spared. We should go to church and thank God for that, but Mama and I are too tired to sit through less than an hour of anything. Sekani wants to spend another day at Uncle Carlos's, so Sunday morning, we return to Garden Heights without him. Right as we get off the freeway, we're met by a police roadblock. Only one lane of traffic isn't blocked by a patrol car, and officers talk to drivers before letting them pass through. Suddenly, it's as if someone grabbed my heart and twisted it. Can we? I swallow. Can we get around them? Doubt it. They probably got these all around the neighborhood. Mama glances over at me and frowns. Munch? You okay? I grab my door handle. They can easily grab their guns and leave us like Khalil. All the blood in our bodies pooling on the street for everybody to see. Our mouths wide open. Our eyes staring at the sky, searching for God. Hey, Mama cups my cheek. Hey, look at me. I try to, but my eyes are filled with tears. I'm so sick of being this damn weak. Khalil may have lost his life, but I lost something too. And it pisses me off. It's okay, Mama says. We got this, all right? Close your eyes if you have to. I do. Keep your hands visible. No sudden moves. Only speak when spoken to. The seconds drag by like hours. The officer asks Mama for her ID and proof of insurance, and I beg Black Jesus to get us home, hoping there won't be a gunshot as she searches through her purse. We finally drive off. See, baby, she says, everything's fine. Her words used to have power. If she said it was fine, it was fine. But after you've held two people as they took their last breaths, words like that don't mean shit anymore. I haven't let go of the car door handle when we pull into our driveway. Daddy comes out and knocks on my window. Mama rolls it down for me. There go my girls, he smiles, but it fades into a frown. What's wrong? You about to go somewhere, baby? Mama asks, meaning they'll talk later.
Yeah, gotta run to the warehouse and stock up.
He taps my shoulder.
Hey, wanna hang out with your daddy? I'll get you some ice cream, one of them big fat tubs that'll last about a month.
I laugh even though I don't feel like it. Daddy's talented like that. I don't need all that ice cream.
I ain't say you needed it. When we get back, we can watch that Harry Potter shit you like so much.
No.
What?
He asks. Daddy, you're the worst person to watch Harry Potter with. The whole time you're talking about. I deepen my voice.
Why don't they shoot that nigga Voldemort? Hey. It don't make sense that in all them movies and books, nobody thought to shoot him.
If it's not that, Mama says, you're giving your Harry Potter is about gangs theory.
It is, he says.
Okay, so it is a good theory. Daddy claims the Hogwarts houses are really gangs. They have their own colors, their own hideouts, and they're always riding for each other, like gangs. Harry, Ron, and Hermione never snitch on one another, just like gangbangers. Death Eaters even have matching tattoos. And look at Voldemort. They're scared to say his name, really. That he who must not be named stuff is like giving him a street name. That's some gangbanging shit right there.
Y'all know that make a lot of sense, Daddy says. Just 'cause they was in England don't mean they wasn't gangbanging.
He looks at me.
So you down to hang with your old man today, or what?
I'm always down to hang out with him. We roll through the streets, Tupac blasting through the subwoofers. He's rapping about keeping your head up, and Daddy glances at me as he raps along, like he's telling me the same thing Tupac is.
I know you're fed up, baby, he nudges my chin, but keep your head up.
He sings with the chorus about how things will get easier. And I don't know if I want to cry because that's really speaking to me right now, or crack up because Daddy's singing is so horrible. Daddy says,
that was a deep dude right there. Real deep. They don't make rappers like that no more.
You're showing your age, Daddy.
Whatever, it's the truth. Rappers nowadays only care about money, hoes, and clothes.
Showing your age, I whisper.
Pac rapped about that stuff too, yeah. But he also cared about uplifting black people, says Daddy. Like he took the word nigger and gave it a whole new meaning. Never ignorant, getting goals accomplished. And he said thug life meant
the hate you give little infants F's everybody. I censor myself. This is my daddy I'm talking to, you know.
You know about that?
Yeah. Khalil told me what he thought it means. We were listening to Tupac right before, you know.
Aight. So what do you think it means?
You don't know? I ask.
I know. I want to hear what you think.
Here he goes, picking my brain. Khalil said it's about what society feeds us as youth and how it comes back and bites them later, I say. I think it's about more than youth, though. I think it's about us, period.
Us who?
He asks. Black people, minorities, poor people, everybody at the bottom in society.
The oppressed, says Daddy.
Yeah, we're the ones who get the short end of the stick, but we're the ones they fear the most. That's why the government targeted the Black Panthers, right? Because they were scared of the Panthers.
Uh-huh, Daddy says. The Panthers educated and empowered the people. That tactic of empowering the oppressed goes even further back than the Panthers, though. Name one.
Is he serious? He always makes me think. This one takes me a second. The Slave Rebellion of 1831, I say. Nat Turner empowered and educated other slaves, and it led to one of the biggest slave revolts in history.
Aight, you on it. He gives me dap. So what's the hate they're giving the little infants in today's society?
Racism?
You got to get a little more detailed than that. Think about Khalil and his whole situation before he died.
He was a drug dealer. It hurts to say that. And possibly a gang member.
Why was he a drug dealer? Why are so many people in our neighborhood drug dealers?
I remember what Khalil said. He got tired of choosing between lights and food. They need money, I say, and they don't have a lot of other ways to get it.
Right. Lack of opportunities, Daddy says. Corporate America don't bring jobs to our communities, and they damn sure ain't quick to hire us. Then, shit, even if you do have a high school diploma, so many of the schools in our neighborhoods don't prepare us well enough. That's why when your mama talked about sending you and your brothers to Williamson, I agreed. Our schools don't get the resources to equip you like Williamson does. It's easier to find some crack than it is to find a good school around here. Now think about this, he says. How did the drugs even get in our neighborhood? This is a multi-billion dollar industry we talking about, baby. That shit is flown into our communities, but I don't know anybody with a private jet. Do you?
No.
Exactly. Drugs come from somewhere, and they're destroying our community, he says. You got folks like Brenda, who think they need them to survive. And then you got the Khalils, who think they need to sell them to survive. The Brendas can't get jobs unless they're clean, and they can't pay for rehab unless they got jobs. When the Khalils get arrested for selling drugs, they either spend most of their life in prison, another billion-dollar industry, or they have a hard time getting a real job and probably start selling drugs again. That's the hate they're giving us, baby. A system designed against us. That's thug life.
I hear you. But Khalil didn't have to sell drugs, I say. You stopped doing it.
True. But unless you're in his shoes, don't judge him. It's easier to fall into that life than it is to stay out of it, especially in a situation like his. Now, one more question.
Really? Damn, he's messed with my head enough.
Yeah.
Really? He mocks in a high voice. I don't even sound like that.
After everything I've said, how does thug life apply to the protests and the riots?
I have to think about that one for a minute. Everybody's pissed 'cause 115 hasn't been charged, I say. But also because he's not the first one to do something like this and get away with it. It's been happening, and people will keep rioting until it changes. So I guess the system's still giving hate, and everybody's still getting fucked? Daddy laughs and gives me dap.
My girl, watch your mouth. But yeah, that's about right. And we won't stop getting fucked till it changes. That's the key. It's got to change.
A lump forms in my throat as the truth hits me hard. That's why people are speaking out, huh? Because it won't change if we don't say something.
Exactly. We can't be silent.
So I can't be silent. Daddy stills. He looks at me. I see the fight in his eyes. I matter more to him than a movement. I'm his baby. And I'll always be his baby. And if being silent means I'm safe, he's all for it. This is bigger than me and Khalil, though. This is about us, with a capital U. Everybody who looks like us, feels like us, and is experiencing this pain with us, despite not knowing me or Khalil. My silence isn't helping us. Daddy fixes his gaze on the road again. He nods.
Yeah, can't be silent.
The trip to the warehouse is hell. You got all these people pushing big flatbeds around, and them things are hard to push as it is, and you gotta maneuver it while it's stacked with stuff. By the time we leave, I feel like Black Jesus snatched me from the depths of hell. Daddy does get me ice cream, though. Buying the stuff is only the first step. We unload it at the store, put it on the shelves, and we, scratch that, I put price stickers on all those bags of chips, cookies, and candies. I should have thought about that before I agreed to hang out with Daddy. While I do the hard work, he pays bills in his office. I'm putting stickers on the hot fries when somebody knocks on the front door.
We're closed!
I yell without looking. We have a sign. Can't they read? Obviously not. They knock again. Daddy appears in the doorway of his office.
We closed!
Another knock. Daddy disappears into his office and returns with his Glock. He's not supposed to carry it since he's a felon, but he says that technically he doesn't carry it. He keeps it in his office. He looks out at the person on the other side of the door.
What you want? I'm hungry, a guy says. Can I buy something?
Daddy unlocks the door and holds it open.
You got 5 minutes.
Thanks, Devante says as he comes in. His afro puff has become a full-blown afro. He has this wild look about him, and I don't mean because of his hair, but like in his eyes. They're puffy and red and darting around. He barely gives me a nod when he passes. Daddy waits at the cash register with his piece. Devante glances outside. He looks at the chips. Fritos, Cheetos, or Doritos. His voice trails off as he glances again. He notices me watching him and looks at the chips.
Doritos. Your 5 minutes getting shorter, Daddy says. Damn, man, aight.
Devante grabs a bag of Fritos.
Can I get something to drink? Hurry up.
Devante goes to the refrigerators. I join Daddy at the cash register. It's so obvious something is up. Devante keeps stretching his neck to look outside. His 5 minutes pass at least 3 times. It doesn't take anybody that long to choose between Coke, Pepsi, or Faygo. I'm sorry, but it doesn't.
Hi, Vante.
Daddy motions him to the cash register.
You trying to get the nerve to stick me up, or you running from somebody?
Hell no, I ain't trying to stick you up.
He takes out a wad of money and sets it on the counter. I'm paid.
And I'm a king. I don't run from no damn body.
No, you hide in stores, I say. He glares at me, but Daddy tells him,
she right. You hiding from somebody. Kings or GDs?
It's not those GDs from the park, is it? I ask.
Why don't you mind your business?
He snaps.
You came in my daddy's business, so I am minding my business.
Hey, Daddy says. But for real, who you hiding from?
Devante stares at his scuffed up chucks that are beyond the help of my cleaning kit.
King, he mumbles. Kings? Or king?
Daddy asks.
King, Devante repeats louder. He wants me to handle the dudes that killed my brother. I'm not trying to have that on me, though. Yeah, I heard about Dalvin, Daddy says. I'm sorry. What happened? We were at Big D's party and some GDs stepped to him. They got into it and one of them cowards shot him in the back.
Oh, damn. That was the same party Khalil and I were at. Those were the gunshots that made us leave.
Big Mav, how'd you get out the game?
Devante asks. Daddy strokes his goatee, studying Devante.
The hard way, he eventually says. My daddy was a king lord, Adonis Carter, a straight up OG.
Yo, Devante says, that's your pops? Big Don?
Yup. Biggest drug dealer this city ever seen. Yo, man, that's crazy.
Devante's seriously fangirling right now.
I heard he had cops working for him and everything. He pulled in big money.
I heard my granddaddy was so busy pulling in big money that he didn't have time for Daddy. There are lots of pictures of Daddy when he was younger wearing mink coats, playing with expensive toys, flashing jewelry, and Grandpa Don isn't in any of the pictures.
Probably so, Daddy says. I wouldn't know too much about that. He went to prison when I was 8, been there ever since. I'm his only child, his son. Everybody expected me to pick up where he left off. I became a king lord when I was 12. Shit, that was the only way to survive. Somebody was always coming at me because of my pops. But if I was a king lord, I had folks to watch my back. Kinging became my life. I was down to die for it, say the word.
He glances at me.
Then I became a daddy, and I realized that king lord shit wasn't worth dying for. I wanted out. But you know how the game work. It ain't as easy as saying you done. King was the crown and he was my boy, but he couldn't let me out like that. I was making good money too, and it was honestly hard to consider walking away from it.
Yeah,
King says you're one of the best D-boys he ever knew,
Devante says. Daddy shrugs.
I got it from my pops. But really, I was only good because I never got caught. One day, me and King took a trip to do a pickup, and we got busted. Cops wanted to know who the weapons belonged to. King had 2 strikes, and that charge would have meant life. I didn't have a record, so I took the charge and got a few years in probation, loyal like a mother. Those were the hardest 3 years of my life. Growing up, I was pissed at my daddy for going to prison and leaving me. And there I was, in the same prison as him, missing out on my baby's lives.
Devante's eyebrows meet.
You were in prison with your pops?
Daddy nods.
All my life, people made him sound like a real king, you know what I'm saying? A legend. But he was a weak old man, regretting the time he missed with me. Realest thing he ever told me was, don't repeat my mistakes.
Daddy looks at me again.
And I was doing that. I missed first days of school, all that. Had my baby wanting to call somebody else daddy because I wasn't there.
I look away. He knows how close Uncle Carlos and I became.
I was officially done with the King Lord shit, drug shit, all of it, Daddy says. And since I took that charge, King agreed to let me out. It made those 3 years worth it.
Devante's eyes dim like they do when he talks about his brother.
You had to go to prison to get out? I'm the exception, not the rule,
Daddy says.
When people say it's for life, it's for life. You gotta be willing to die in it or die for it. You want out? I don't want to go to prison.
He didn't ask you that, I say. He asked if you wanted out. Devante is quiet for a long time. He looks up at Daddy and says,
I just want to be alive, man.
Daddy strokes his goatee. He sighs.
I'll help you. But I promise, you go back to slinging or banging, you'll wish King would have got you when I'm done. You go to school?
Yeah.
What your grades look like?
Daddy asks. He shrugs.
What the hell is this?
Daddy imitates Devante's shrug.
You know what grades you get, so what kind?
I mean, I get A's and B's and shit, Devante says. I ain't dumb.
All right, good. We gonna make sure you stay in school, too.
Man, I can't go back to Garden High, Devante says.
All them King Lords up in there, you know that's a death wish, right? I ain't say you was going there. We'll figure something out. In the meantime, you can work here in the store. You been staying home at night?
Nah. King got his boys watching for me over there.
Of course he do.
Daddy mumbles.
We'll figure something out with that, too. Star, show him how to do the price stickers.
You're really hiring him, just like that? I ask.
Whose store is this, Star?
Yours, but...
Nuff said. Show him how to do the price stickers.
Devante snickers. I want to punch him in his throat. Come on, I mumble. We sit cross-legged in the chip aisle. Daddy locks the front door and goes back in his office. I grab a jumbo bag of hot Cheetos and slap a 99-cent sticker on them.
You're supposed to show me how to do it,
Devante says. I am showing you. Watch. I grab another bag. He leans real close over my shoulder. Too close. Breathing in my ear and shit. I move my head and look at him. Do you mind?
What's your problem with me?
He asks.
You caught an attitude yesterday, soon as I walked up. I ain't did nothing to you.
I put a sticker on some Doritos. No, but you did it to Danasia and Kenya, and who knows how many other girls in Garden Heights.
Hold up. I ain't do nothing to Kenya.
You asked for her number, didn't you? Even though you're with Danasia.
I'm not with Danasia. I just danced with her at that party, he says. She the one who wanted to act like she was my girlfriend and got mad because I was talking to Kenya. If I wouldn't have been dealing with them, I could have...
He swallows.
I could have helped Dalvin. By the time I got to him, he was on the floor bleeding. All I could do was hold him.
I see myself sitting in a pool of blood, too. And try to tell him it would be okay.
Even though you knew
there was no chance in hell it would be.
We go quiet. I get one of those weird deja vu moments, though. I see myself sitting cross-legged like I am now, but I'm showing Khalil how to do the price stickers. We couldn't help Khalil with his situation before he died. Maybe we can help Devante. I hand him a bag of hot fries. I'm only going to explain how to use this price gun one time, and you better pay attention.
He grins. My attention's all yours, little mama.
Later, when I'm supposed to be asleep, my mom tells my dad in the hallway, "So he's hiding from King, and you think he should hide here?"
Devante.
Apparently, Daddy couldn't figure it out and decided that Devante should stay with us. Daddy dropped the two of us off a couple of hours ago before heading back to the store to protect it from the rioters. He just got back. He said our house is the one place King won't look for Devante.
I had to do something,
Daddy says. I understand that, and I know you think this is your do-over with Khalil.
It ain't like that.
Yeah, it is, she says softly. I get it, baby. I have a ton of regrets regarding Khalil myself. But this? This is dangerous for our family.
It's just for now. Devante can't stay in Garden Heights. This neighborhood ain't good for him.
Wait, it's not good for him, but it's fine for our kids?
Come on, Lisa, it's late. I'm not trying to hear this right now. I've been at the store all night.
And I've been up all night, worried about you. Worried about my babies being in this neighborhood.
They fine. They ain't involved in none of that banging shit.
Mama scoffs. Yeah, so fine that I have to drive almost an hour to get them to a decent school. And God forbid Sakani wants to play outside. I gotta drive to my brother's house, where I don't have to worry about him getting shot like his sister's best friend did. It's messed up that she could mean either Khalil or Natasha.
Aight, let's say we move, Daddy said. Then what? We just like all the other sellouts who leave and turn their backs on the neighborhood. We can change stuff around here, but instead we run? That's what you want to teach our kids?
I want my kids to enjoy life. I get it, Maverick. You want to help your people out. I do, too. That's why I bust my butt every day at that clinic. But moving out of the neighborhood won't mean you're not real. And it won't mean you can't help this community. You need to figure out what's more important, your family or Garden Heights. I've already made my choice.
What you saying?
I'm saying I'll do what I gotta do for my babies. There are footsteps. Then a door closes. I stay up most of the night wondering what that means for them. Us. Okay, yeah, they've talked about moving before. But they weren't arguing about it like this until after Khalil died. If they break up, it'll be one more thing 115 takes from me. 11. Monday morning. I know something is up when I first step into Williamson. Folks are quiet as hell. Well, whispering, really. In little huddles in the halls in the atrium, like they're discussing plays during a basketball game. Haley and Maya find me before I find them. Did you get the text? Haley asks. That's the first thing she says. No hey or anything. I still don't have my phone, so I'm like, what text? She shows me hers. There's a big group text with about 100 names on it. Haley's older brother Remy sent out the first message. Protesting today at first period. Then curly-haired dimpled Luke replied, hell yeah, free day, I'm game. And Remy came back with, that's the point, dumbass. It's like somebody hit a pause button on my heart. They're protesting for Khalil? Yeah, Haley says, all giddy and shit.
Perfect timing, too. I so did not study for that English exam. This is, like, the first time Remy actually came up with a good idea to get out of class. I mean, it's kind of messed up that we're protesting a drug dealer's death, but all my Williamson rules go out the door, and Star from Garden Heights shows up.
What the fuck that got to do with it?
Their mouths open into perfectly shaped O's.
Like, I mean, if he was a drug dealer,
Haley says, that explains why
he got killed even though he wasn't doing shit. So it's cool he got killed? But I thought you were protesting it.
We are. God. Lighten up, Star, she says. I thought you'd be all over this, considering your obsession on Tumblr lately.
You know what? I say, 1 second from really going off.
Leave me alone. Have fun in your little protest. I want to fight every person I pass, Floyd Mayweather style.
They're so damn excited about getting a day off. Khalil's in a grave. He can't get a day off from that shit. I live it every single day, too. In class, I toss my backpack on the floor and throw myself into my seat. When Haley and Maya come in, I give them a stank eye and silently dare them to say shit to me. I'm breaking all of my Williamson Star rules with zero fucks to give.
Chris gets there before the bell rings, headphones draped around his neck. He comes down my aisle and squeezes my nose, going, honk, honk, because for some reason it's hilarious to him. Usually I laugh and swat at him, but today, yeah, I'm not in the mood. I just swat. Kinda hard, too. He goes, ow, and gives his hand a quick shake.
What's wrong with you?
I don't respond. If I open my mouth, I'll explode. He crouches beside my desk and shakes my thigh.
Star? You okay?
Our teacher, balding, stumpy Mr. Warren, clears his throat.
Mr. Bryant, my class is not the love connection. Please have a seat.
Chris slides into the desk next to mine.
What's wrong with her?
He whispers to Haley. She plays dumb and says, dunno. Mr. Warren tells us to take out our MacBooks and begins the lesson on British literature. Not even 5 minutes in, someone says,
justice for Khalil.
Justice for Khalil,
the others chant.
Justice for Khalil.
Mr. Warren tells them to stop, but they get louder and pound their fists on the desks. I want to puke and scream and cry. My classmates stampede toward the door. Maya's the last one out. She glances back at me, then at Haley, who motions her to come on. Maya follows her out. I think I'm done following Haley. In the hall, chants for Khalil go off like sirens. Unlike Haley, some of them may not care that he was a drug dealer. They might be almost as upset as I am. But since I know why Remy started this protest, I stay in my seat. Chris does too for some reason. His desk scrapes the floor as it scoots closer to mine until they touch. He brushes my tears with his thumb.
You knew him, didn't you?
He says. I nod.
Oh, says Mr. Warren. I am so sorry, Star. You don't have to. You can call your parents, you know.
I wipe my face. The last thing I want is Mama making a fuss because I can't handle all this. Worse, I don't want to be unable to handle it. Can you continue with the lesson, sir? I ask. The distraction would be nice. He smiles sadly and does as I ask. For the rest of the day, sometimes Chris and I are the only ones in our classes. Sometimes one or two other people join us. People go out of their way to tell me they think Khalil's death is bullshit, but that Remy's reason for protesting is bullshit, too. I mean, this sophomore girl comes up to me in the hall and explains that she supports the cause but decided to go back to class after she heard why they were really protesting. They act like I'm the official representative of the black race, and they owe me an explanation. I think I understand, though. If I sit out a protest, I'm making a statement. But if they sit out a protest, they look racist. At lunch, Chris and I head to our table near the vending machines. Jess, with her perfect pixie cut, is the only one there, eating cheese fries and reading her phone. Hey? I ask, more than say. I'm surprised she's here.
Sup? She nods. Have a seat. As you can see, there's plenty of room.
I sit beside her and Chris sits on the other side of me. Jess and I have played basketball together for 3 years and she's put her head on my shoulder for 2 of them, but I'm ashamed to admit I don't know much about her. I do know she's a senior. Her parents are attorneys, and she works at a bookstore. I didn't know that she'd skipped the protest. I guess I'm staring at her hard because she says,
I don't use dead people to get out of class.
If I wasn't straight, I would totally date her for saying that. This time, I rest my head on her shoulder. She pats my hair and says,
white people do stupid shit sometimes.
Jess is white. Seven and Layla join us with their trays. Seven holds his fist out to me. I bump it.
Seven, Jess says, and they fist bump too.
I had no idea they were cool like that.
I take it we're protesting the get out of class protest?
Yup, Seven says, protesting the get out of class protest.
Seven and I get Sakani after school, and he won't shut up about the news cameras he saw from his classroom window, because he's Sakani, and he came into this world looking for a camera. I have too many selfies of him on my phone giving the light-skinned face, his eyes squinted and eyebrows raised.
Are y'all gonna be on the news? He asks.
Nah, says Seven, don't need to be.
We could go home, lock the door, and fight over the TV like we always do. Or we could help Daddy at the store. We go to the store. Daddy stands in the doorway watching a reporter and camera operator set up in front of Mr. Lewis's shop. Of course, when Sakani sees the camera, he says,
oh, I want to be on TV.
Shut up, I say. No, you don't.
Yes, I do. You don't know what I want.
The car stops, and Sakani pushes my seat forward, sending my chin into the dashboard as he jumps out.
Daddy, I want to be on TV.
I rub my chin. His hyper butt is going to kill me one day. Daddy holds Sakani by the shoulders.
Calm down, man. You're not going to be on TV. What's going on?
Seven asks when we get out.
Some cops got jumped around the corner,
Daddy says, one arm around Sakani's chest to keep him still.
Jumped? I say.
Yeah, they pulled them out their patrol car and stomped them. Gray Boys.
The code name for King Lords.
Damn.
I heard what happened at y'all school, Daddy says. Everything cool?
Yeah, I give the easy answer. We're good. Mr. Lewis adjusts his clothes and runs a hand over his afro. The reporter says something, and he lets out a belly-jiggling laugh.
What this fool about to say? Daddy wonders. We go live in 5,
says the camera operator. And all I can think is, please don't put Mr. Lewis on live TV.
4, 3, 2, 1.
That's right, Joe, the reporter says. I'm here with Mr. Cedric Lewis, Jr., who witnessed the incident involving the officers today. Can you tell us what you saw, Mr. Lewis?
He ain't witnessed nothing, Daddy tells us. Was in his shop the whole time. I told him what happened.
I sure can, Mr. Lewis says,
them boys pulled those officers out their car. They weren't doing nothing either. Just sitting there and got beat like dogs. Ridiculous, you hear me? Re-damn-diculous.
Somebody's gonna turn Mr. Lewis into a meme. He's making a fool out of himself and doesn't even know it.
Do you think that it was retaliation for the Khalil Harris case? The reporter asks.
I sure do. Which is stupid. These thugs been terrorizing Garden Heights for years. How they gonna get mad now? What, 'cause they didn't kill him themselves? The president and all of them searching for terrorists. But I'll name one right now they can come get.
Don't do it, Mr. Lewis, Daddy prays. Don't do it.
Of course he does.
His name King. And he live right here in Garden Heights. Probably the biggest drug dealer in the city. He over that King Lord's gang. Come get him if you want to get somebody. Wasn't nobody but his boys who did that to them cops anyway. We sick of this. Somebody march about that.
Daddy covers Sekani's ears. Every cuss word that follows equals a dollar in Sekani's jar if he hears it.
Shit. Daddy hisses. Shit, 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 this mother.
He snitched, says Seven.
On live TV, I add. Daddy keeps saying,
shit, shit, shit.
Do you think that the curfew the mayor announced today will prevent incidents like this? The reporter asks Mr. Lewis. I look at Daddy. What curfew? He takes his hands off Sekani's ears.
Every business in Garden Heights got to close by 9, and nobody can be in the streets after 10. Lights out. Like in prison.
So you'll be home tonight, Daddy? Sekani asks. Daddy smiles and pulls him closer.
Yeah, man. After you do your homework, I can show you a thing or two on Madden.
The reporter wraps up her interview. Daddy waits until she and the camera operator leave, and then goes over to Mr. Lewis.
You crazy?
He asks.
What? 'Cause I told the truth?
Mr. Lewis says.
Man, you can't be going on live TV snitching like that. You a dead man walking. You know that, right?
I ain't scared of that nigga,
Mr. Lewis says real loud for everybody to hear.
You scared of him?
Nah, but I know how the game work.
I'm too old for games. You ought to be too.
Mr. Lewis, listen.
Now, you listen here, boy. I fought a war, came back and fought one here. See this?
He lifts up his pants leg, revealing a plaid sock over a prosthetic.
Lost it in the war. This right here?
He lifts his shirt to his underarm. There's a thin pink scar stretching from his back to his swollen belly.
Got it after some white boys cut me 'cause I drank from their fountain.
He lets his shirt fall down.
I done faced a whole lot worse than some so-called king. Ain't nothing he can do but kill me. And if that's how I gotta go for speaking the truth, that's how I gotta go.
You don't get it,
Daddy says.
Yeah, I do. Hell, I get you. Walking around here claiming you ain't a gangster no more. Claiming you trying to change stuff, but still following all of that don't snitch mess. And you teaching them kids the same thing, ain't you? King's still controlling your dumb ass. And you're too stupid to realize it.
Stupid? How you gonna call me stupid when you the one snitching on live TV?
A familiar whoop whoop sound alarms us. Oh, God. The patrol car with flashing lights cruises down the street. It stops next to Daddy and Mr. Lewis. Two officers get out, one black, one white. Their hands linger too close to the guns at their waists.
No, no, no. We got a problem here?
The black one asks, looking squarely at Daddy. He's bald, just like Daddy, but older, taller, bigger.
No, sir, officer,
Daddy says. His hands that were once in his jeans pockets are visible at his sides.
You sure about that?
The younger white one asks.
It didn't seem that way to us. We were just talking, officers,
Mr. Lewis says, much softer than he was minutes ago.
His hands are at his sides, too. His parents must have had the talk with him when he was 12.
To me, it looks like this young man was harassing you, sir,
the black one says, still looking at Daddy. He hasn't looked at Mr. Lewis yet. I wonder if it's because Mr. Lewis isn't wearing an NWA t-shirt, or because there aren't tattoos all on his arms, or because he's not wearing somewhat baggy jeans and a backwards cap.
You got some ID on you?
The black cop asked Daddy.
Sir, I was about to go back to my store. I said, do you have some ID on you?
My hands shake. Breakfast, lunch, and everything else churns in my stomach, ready to come back up my throat. They're gonna take Daddy from me.
What's going on?
I turn around. Tim, Mr. Rubin's nephew, walks over to us. People have stopped on the sidewalk across the street.
I'm gonna reach for my ID,
Daddy says.
It's in my back pocket, right?
Daddy, I say. Daddy keeps his eyes on the officer.
Y'all go in the store, right? It's okay.
We don't move, though. Daddy's hand slowly goes to his back pocket, and I look from his hands to theirs, watching to see if they're going to make a move for their guns. Daddy removes his wallet, the leather one I bought for him for Father's Day with his initials embossed on it. He shows it to them.
See, my ID is in here.
His voice has never sounded so small. The black officer takes the wallet and opens it.
Oh, he says, Maverick Carter.
He exchanges a look with his partner. Both of them look at me. My heart stops. They've realized I'm the witness. There must be a file that lists my parents' names on it, or the detectives blabbed, and now everyone at the station knows our names, or they could have gotten it from Uncle Carlos somehow. I don't know how it happened, but it happened. And if something happens to Daddy... The black officer looks at him.
Get on the ground, hands behind your back. But on the ground, face down, he yells. Now!
Daddy looks at us. His expression apologizes for the fact that we have to see this. He gets down on one knee and lowers himself to the ground, face down. His hands go behind his back and his fingers interlock. Where's that camera operator now? Why can't this be on the news?
Now, wait a minute, officer, Mr. Lewis says. Me and him were just talking.
Sir, go inside,
the white cop tells him.
But he didn't do anything, Seven says. Boy, go inside,
the black cop says.
No, that's my father, and... Seven!
Daddy yells. Even though he's lying on the concrete, there's enough authority in his voice to make Seven shut up. The black officer checks Daddy while his partner glances around at all of the onlookers. There's quite a few of us now. Ms. Yvette and a couple of her clients stand in her doorway, towels around the client's shoulders. A car has stopped in the street.
Everyone go about your own business, the white one says.
No, sir, says Tim. This is our business.
The black cop keeps his knee on Daddy's back as he searches him. He pats him down once, twice, three times, just like 115 did Khalil. Nothing.
Larry,
the white cop says. The black one, who must be Larry, looks up at him, then at all the people who have gathered around. Larry takes his knee off Daddy's back and stands.
Get up, he says.
Slowly, Daddy gets to his feet. Larry glances at me. Bile pools in my mouth. He turns to Daddy and says,
I'm keeping an eye on you, boy. Remember that.
Daddy's jaw looks rock hard. The cops drive off. The car that had stopped in the street leaves, and all of the onlookers go on about their business. One person hollers out, "It's all right, Maverick." Daddy looks at the sky and blinks the way I do when I don't want to cry. He clenches and unclenches his hands. Mr. Lewis touches his back.
"Come on, son."
He guides Daddy our way, but they pass us and go into the store. Tim follows them.
"Why did they do Daddy like that?"
Sakani asks softly. He looks at me and Seven with tears in his eyes. Seven wraps an arm around him.
"I don't know, man."
"I know." I go in the store. Devante leans against a broom near the cash register, wearing one of those ugly green aprons Daddy tries to make me and Seven wear when we work in the store. There's a pang in my chest. Khalil wore one too. Devante's talking to Kenya as she holds a basket full of groceries. When the bell on the door clangs behind me, both of them look my way.
"Yo, what happened?"
Devante asks.
"Was that the cops outside?" says Kenya.
From here, I see Mr. Lewis and Tim standing in the doorway of Daddy's office. He must be in there.
"Yeah,"
I answer Kenya, heading toward the back. Kenya and Devante follow me, asking about 50 million questions that I don't have time to answer. Papers are scattered all on the office floor. Daddy's hunched over his desk, his back moving up and down with each heavy breath. He pounds the desk.
"Fuck!"
Daddy once told me there's a rage passed down to every black man from his ancestors, born the moment they couldn't stop the slave masters from hurting their families. Daddy also said there's nothing more dangerous than when that rage is activated.
"Let it out, son,"
Mr. Lewis tells him.
"Fuck them pigs, man," Tim says. "They only did that shit because they know about Star."
"Wait, what?" Daddy glances over his shoulder. His eyes are puffy and wet, like he's been crying.
"The hell you talking about, Tim? One of the homeboys saw you, Lisa, and your baby girl getting out an ambulance at the crime scene that night," Tim says. "Word spread around the neighborhood, and folks think she's the witness they've been talking about on the news."
"Oh, shit."
"Star, go ring Kenya up," Daddy says. "Vante, finish them floors."
I head for the cash register, passing Seven and Sakani. The neighborhood knows. I ring Kenya up, my stomach knotted the whole time. If the neighborhood knows, it won't be long until people outside of Garden Heights know. And then what?
"You rang that up twice,"
Kenya says.
"Huh?"
"The milk. You rang it up twice, Star?" "Oh." I cancel one of the milks and put the carton into a bag. Kenya's probably cooking for herself and Lyric tonight. She does that sometimes. I ring up the rest of her stuff, take her money, and hand her the change. She stares at me a second, then says,
"Were you really the one with him?"
My throat is thick. Does it matter?
"Yeah, it matters. Why you keeping quiet about it? Like you hiding or something?"
"Don't say it that way."
"But it is that way, right?"
I sigh. "Kenya, stop. You don't understand, all right?" Kenya folds her arms.
"What's to understand?"
"A lot."
I don't mean to yell, but damn,
I can't go around telling people that shit.
"Why not?"
"Because you ain't see what the cops just did to my dad, 'cause they know I'm the witness. So you gonna let the police stop you from speaking out for Khalil? I thought you cared about him way more than that."
"I do. I care more than she may ever know."
I already talked to the cops, Kenya. Nothing happened. What else am I supposed to do?
Go on TV or something, I don't know, she says.
Tell everybody what really happened that night. They're not even giving his side of the story. You're letting them trash talk him.
Excuse, how the hell am I letting them do anything?
You hear all the stuff they're saying about him on the news, calling him a thug and stuff, and you know that ain't Khalil. I bet if he was one of your private school friends, you'd be all on TV defending him and shit.
Are you for real?
Hell yeah, she says. You dropped him for them bougie-ass kids, and you know it. You probably would have dropped me if I didn't come around because of my brother.
That's not true.
You sure?
I'm not.
Kenya shakes her head. Fucked up part about this? The Khalil I know would have jumped on TV in a hot second and told everybody what happened that night if it meant defending you. And you can't do the same for him.
It's a verbal slap. The worst kind, too, because it's the truth.
Kenya gets her bags. I'm just saying, Star, if I could change what happens at my house with my mama and daddy, I would. Here you are, with a chance to help change what happens in our whole neighborhood, and you staying quiet, like a coward.
Kenya leaves. Tim and Mr. Lewis aren't far behind her. Tim gives me the black power fist on his way out. I don't deserve it, though. I head to Daddy's office. Seven standing in the doorway, and Daddy sitting on his desk. Sikani's next to him, nodding along to whatever Daddy's saying, but looking sad. Reminds me of the time Daddy and Mama had the talk with me. Guess Daddy decided not to wait until Sikani's 12. Daddy sees me.
Sev, go cover the cash register. Take Sikani with you. About time he learned.
Aw, man, Sikani groans. Don't blame him. The more you learn to do at the store, the more you're expected to do at the store.
Daddy pats the now empty spot beside him on the desk. I hop up on it. His office has just enough space for the desk and a file cabinet. Framed photographs crowd the walls, like the one of him and Mama at the courthouse the day they got married. Her belly, aka me, big and round. Pictures of me and my brothers as babies. And this one picture from about 7 years ago when my parents took the three of us to the mall for one of those JCPenney family portraits. They dressed alike in baseball jerseys, baggy jeans, and Timberlands. Tacky.
You aight? Daddy asks.
Are you?
I will be, he says. Just hate that you and your brothers had to see that shit.
They only did it 'cause of me.
Nah, baby. They started that before they knew about you.
But that didn't help. I stare at my J's as I kick my feet back and forth. Kenya called me a coward for not speaking out.
She didn't mean it. She going through a lot, that's all. King throwing Aisha around like a rag doll every single night.
But she's right. My voice cracks. I'm this close to crying. I am a coward. After seeing what they did to you, I don't want to say shit now.
Hey.
Daddy takes my chin, so I have no choice but to look at him.
Don't fall for that trap. That's what they want. If you don't want to speak out, that's up to you. But don't let it be because you're scared of them. Who do I tell you that you have to fear?
Nobody but God. And you and Mama. Especially Mama when she's extremely pissed. He chuckles.
Yeah. The list ends there. You ain't got nothing or nobody else to fear. You see this?
He rolls up his shirt sleeve, revealing the tattoo of my baby picture on his upper arm.
What'd it say at the bottom?
Something to live for, something to die for. I say, without really looking. I've seen it my whole life.
Exactly. You and your brothers are something to live for and something to die for. And I'll do whatever I gotta do to protect you.
He kisses my forehead.
If you're ready to talk, baby, talk. I got your back.
12. I'm luring bricks inside when it passes out front. I watch it crawl down the street for the longest time till I get the sense to alert somebody.
Daddy!
He looks up from pulling weeds around his bell peppers.
Are they for real with that?
The tank resembles the ones they show on the news when talking about war in the Middle East. It's the size of two Hummers. The blue and white lights on the front make the street almost as bright as it is in daytime. An officer is positioned on top, wearing a vest and a helmet. He points his rifle ahead. A voice booms from the armored vehicle.
All persons found violating the curfew will be subject to arrest.
Daddy pulls more weeds.
Some bullshit.
Bricks follows the piece of bologna I dangle in front of him all the way to his spot in the kitchen. He sits there all content, chomping on it and the rest of his food. Bricks won't act crazy as long as Daddy's home. All of us are kinda like Bricks, really. Daddy being home means Mama won't sit up all night, Sikani won't flinch all the time, and Seven won't have to be the man of the house. I'll sleep better, too. Daddy comes in, dusting caked dirt off his hands.
Them roses dying. Bricks, you've been pissing on my roses.
Bricks's head perks up. He locks his eyes with Daddy's, but eventually lowers his head.
I bet not catch you doing it, Daddy says, or we gonna have a problem.
Bricks lowers his eyes, too. I grab a paper towel and a slice of pizza from the box on the counter. This is like my fourth slice tonight. Mama bought two huge pies from Sal's on the other side of the freeway. Italians own it, so the pizza is thin, herby. Is that a word? And good.
You finished your homework? Daddy asks.
Yep. A lie. He washes his hands at the kitchen sink.
Got any tests this week?
Trig on Friday.
You studied for it?
Yep. Another lie.
Good.
He gets the grapes out the refrigerator.
You still got that old laptop? The one you had before we bought you that expensive-ass fruit one?
I laugh. It's an Apple MacBook, Daddy.
It damn sure wasn't the price of an apple. Anyway, you got the old one?
Yeah.
Good. Give it to Seven. Tell him to look over it and make sure it's aight. I want Devante to have it.
Why?
You pay bills?
No.
Then I ain't gotta answer that.
That's how he gets out of almost every argument with me. I should buy one of those cheap magazine subscriptions and say, yeah, I pay a bill, and what? It won't matter, though. I head to my room after I finish my pizza. Daddy's already gone to his and Mama's room. Their TV's on, and they're both lying on their stomachs on the bed. One of her legs on his as she types on her laptop. It's oddly adorable. Sometimes I watch them to get an idea of what I want one day.
You still mad at me about Devante?
Daddy asks her. She doesn't answer, keeping her eyes on her laptop. He scrunches up his nose and gets all in her face.
You still mad at me? Huh? You still mad at me?
She laughs and playfully pushes at him. Move, boy. No, I'm not mad at you. Now give me a grape. He grins and feeds her a grape. And I just can't. The cuteness is too much. Yeah, they're my parents. But they're my OTP. Seriously. Daddy watches whatever she's doing on the computer, feeding her a grape every time he eats one. She's probably uploading the latest family snapshots on Facebook for our out-of-town relatives. With everything that's going on, what can she say?
Sekani saw cops harass his daddy, but he's doing so well in school. Hashtag proud mom. Or, Star saw her best friend die. Keep her in your prayers. But my baby made the honor roll again. Hashtag blessed. Or even, tanks are rolling by outside, but Seven's been accepted into 6 colleges so far. Hashtag he is going places. I go to my room. Both my old and new laptops are on my desk, which is a mess. There's a huge pair of Daddy's Jordans next to my old laptop. The yellowed bottoms of the sneakers face the lamp, and a layer of Saran wrap protects my concoction of detergent and toothpaste that'll eventually clean them. Watching yellowed soles turn icy again is as satisfying as squeezing a blackhead and getting all the gunk out. Amazing. According to the lie I told Daddy, my homework is supposed to be done. But I've been on a Tumblr break, aka I haven't started my homework and have spent the last 2 hours on Tumblr. I started a new blog, The Khalil I Know. It doesn't have my name on it, just pictures of Khalil. In the first one, he's 13 with an afro. Uncle Carlos took us to a ranch so we could get a taste of country life. And Khalil's looking side-eyed at a horse that's beside him. I remember him saying, if that thing makes a wrong move, I'm running. On Tumblr, I captioned the picture, The Khalil I Know Was Afraid of Animals. I tagged it with his name. One person liked it and reblogged it. Then another and another. That made me post more pictures, like one of us in a bathtub when we were 4. You can't see our private parts because of all the suds, and I'm looking away from the camera. Miss Rosalie's sitting on the side of the tub beaming at us, and Khalil's beaming right back at her. I wrote, The Khalil I know loved bubble baths almost as much as he loved his grandma. In just 2 hours, hundreds of people have liked and reblogged the pictures. I know it's not the same as getting on the news, like Kenya said, but I hope it helps. It's helping me, at least. Other people posted about Khalil, uploaded artwork of him, posted pictures of him that they show on the news. I think I've reblogged every single one. Funny, though, somebody posted a video clip of Tupac from back in the day. Okay, so every video clip of Tupac is from back in the day. He's got a little kid on his lap and is wearing a backward snapback that would be fly now. He explains thug life like Khalil said he did. The hate you give little infants fucks everybody. Pac spells out fucks because that kid is looking dead in his face. When Khalil told me what it meant, I kinda understood it. I really understand it now. I grab my old laptop when my phone buzzes on my desk. Mama returned it earlier, hallelujah, thank you, Black Jesus. She said it's only in case there's another situation at school. I got it back, though. Don't really care why. I'm hoping it's a text from Kenya. I sent her the link to my new Tumblr earlier. Thought she'd like to see it since she kind of pushed me to do it. But it's Chris. He took note from Seven with his all caps texts. OMG! This Fresh Prince episode, Will's dad didn't take him with him. The asshole came back and left him again. Now he's having a breakdown with Uncle Phil. My eyes are sweating. Understandable. That's seriously the saddest episode ever. I text Chris back. Sorry, sad face. And your eyes aren't sweating. You're crying, babe. He replies, lies! I say, you ain't gotta lie, Craig. You ain't gotta lie. He responds, did you really use a line from Friday on me? So watching 90s movies is kinda our thing, too. I text back, yep. Wink, smiley face. He replies, bye, Felicia. I take the laptop to Seven's room, phone in hand, in case Chris has another Fresh Prince breakdown. Some reggae chants meet me in the hall. followed by Kendrick Lamar rapping about being a hypocrite. Seven sits on the side of the lower bunk, an open computer tower at his feet. With his head down, his dreads hang loosely and make a curtain in front of his face. Devante sits cross-legged on the floor, his afro bobs to the song. A zombie version of Steve Jobs watches them from a poster on the wall, along with all these superheroes and Star Wars characters. There's a Slytherin comforter on the bottom bunk that I swear I'll steal one day. Seven and I are reverse HP fans. We liked the movies first, then the books. I got Khalil and Natasha hooked on them, too. Mama found the first movie for $1 at a thrift store back when we lived in the Cedar Grove Projects. Seven and I said we were Slytherins, since almost all Slytherins were rich. When you're a kid in a one-bedroom in the Projects, rich is the best thing anybody can be. Seven removes a silver box from the computer and examines it.
It's not even that old.
What are you doing? I ask.
Big D asked me to fix his computer. It needs some new DVD drives. He burnt his out making all them bootlegs.
My brother is the unofficial Garden Heights tech guy. Old ladies, hustlers, and everybody in between pay him to fix their computers and phones. He makes good money like that, too. A black garbage bag leans against the foot of the bunk bed with some clothes sticking out the top of it. Somebody put it over the fence and left it in our front yard. Seven, Sakani, and I found it when we came home from the store. We thought it may have been Devante's, but Seven looked inside and everything in it belonged to him. The stuff he had at his mama's house. He called Aisha. She said she was putting him out. King told her to. Seven, I'm sorry.
It's okay, Star.
But she shouldn't have.
I said it's okay.
He glances up at me.
All right. Don't sweat it.
All right, I say, as my phone vibrates. I hand Devante the laptop and look. Still no response from Kenya. Instead, it's a text from Maya. Are you mad at us?
What's this for?
Devante asks, staring at the laptop. Daddy wants you to have it, but he said let Seven check it out first. I tell him as I reply to Maya. What do you think?
What do you want me to have it for?
Devante asks. Maybe he wants to see if you actually know how to operate one, I tell Devante.
I know how to use a computer, Devante says. He hits Seven, who's snickering.
My phone buzzes 3 times. Maya has responded. Definitely mad. Can the 3 of us talk? Things have been awkward lately. Typical Maya. If Haley and I have any kind of disagreement, she tries to fix it. She has to know this won't be a kumbaya moment. I reply, okay, we'll let you know when I'm at my uncle's. Gunshots fire at rapid speed in the distance. I flinch.
Goddamn machine guns! Daddy says. Folks acting like this Iran or some shit.
No cussing, Daddy, Sakani says from the den.
Sorry, man. I'll add $1 to the jar.
2! You said the GD word.
I ate 2. Star, come to the kitchen for a second.
In the kitchen, Mama speaks in her other voice on the phone. Yes, ma'am. We want the same thing. She sees me. And here's my lovely daughter now. Could you hold, please? She covers the receiver. It's the DA. She would like to talk to you this week. Definitely not what I expected. Oh. Yeah, Mama says. Look, baby, if you're not comfortable with it. I am. I glance at Daddy. He nods. I can do it. Oh, she says, looking from me to Daddy and back. Okay. As long as you're sure. I think we should meet with Miss Ofra first, though. Possibly take her up on her offer to represent you.
Definitely, Daddy says. I don't trust them folks at the DA office.
So how about we see her tomorrow and meet with the DA later on this week? Mama asks. I grab another slice of pizza and take a bite. It's cold now, but cold pizza is the best pizza. So, 2 days of no school? Oh, you're going to school, she says. And did you eat any salad while you're eating all that pizza? I've had veggies, these little bitty peppers. They don't count when they're that little. Yeah, they do. If babies can count as humans when they're little, veggies can count as veggies when they're little. That logic ain't working with me. So we'll meet with Miss Ofer tomorrow and the DA on Wednesday. Sound like a plan? Yeah, except the school part. Mama uncovers the phone. Sorry for the delay. We can come in on Wednesday morning.
In the meantime, tell your boys, the mayor, and the police chief to get them fucking tanks out my neighborhood.
Daddy says loudly. Mama swats at him, but he's going down the hall.
Claim folks need to act peaceful, but rolling through here like we in a goddamn war.
$2, Daddy, Sikani says. When Mama hangs up, I say, it wouldn't kill me to miss one day of school. I don't want to be there if they try that protest mess again. I wouldn't be surprised if Remy tried to get a whole week off because of Khalil. I need 2 days, that's all. Mama raises her brows. Okay, 1.5, please. She takes a deep breath and lets it out slowly. We'll see. But not a word of this to your brothers, you hear me? Basically, she said yes without saying yes outright. I can deal with that. Pastor Eldridge once preached that faith isn't just believing, but taking steps toward that belief. So when my alarm goes off Tuesday morning, by faith, I don't get up, believing that Mama won't make me go to school. And to quote Pastor Eldridge, hallelujah, God shows up and shows out. Mama doesn't make me get up. I stay in bed listening as everybody else gets ready for the day. Sikani makes it his business to tell Mama I'm not up yet. Don't worry about her, she says. Worry about yourself. The TV in the den blares some morning news show, and Mama hums around the house. When Khalil and 115 are mentioned, the volume lowers a whole lot and doesn't go back up until a political story comes on. My phone buzzes under my pillow. I take it out and look. Kenya finally texted me back about my new Tumblr. She would make me wait hours for a response, and her comment is short as hell. It's aight. I roll my eyes. That's about as close as I'm gonna get to a compliment from her. I text back. I love you too. Her response? I know. Smiley face. She's so petty. Part of me wonders, though, if she didn't respond last night because of drama at her house. Daddy said King's still beating Aisha up. Sometimes he hits Kenya and Lyric, too. Kenya's not the type to talk about it like that, so I ask, everything okay? The usual, she writes back. Short, but it says enough. There isn't much I can do, so I just remind her, I'm here. If you need me. Her response? You better be. See? Petty. Here's the messed up part about missing school. You wonder what you would be doing if you went. At 8, I figure Chris and I would just be getting to history, since it's our first class on Tuesdays. I send him a quick text. Won't be at school today. 2 minutes later, he replies, are you sick? Need me to kiss it and make it better? Wink, wink. He seriously typed wink, wink instead of 2 wink emojis. I'll admit, I smile. I write back. What if I'm contagious? He says, doesn't matter. I'll kiss you anywhere. Wink, wink. I reply. Is that another line? He responds in less than a minute.
It's whatever you want it to be. Love you, Fresh Princess.
Pause. That L word completely catches me off guard, like a player from the other team stealing the ball right as you're about to make a layup. It takes all of your momentum, and you spend a week wondering how that steal slipped up on you. Yeah, Chris saying love you is like that, except I can't waste a week wondering about it. By not answering, I'm answering, if that makes sense. The shot clock is winding down, and I need to say something. But what? By not saying I before love you, he's making it more casual. Seriously, love you and I love you are different. Same team, different players. Love you isn't as forward or aggressive as I love you. Love you can slip up on you, sure, but it doesn't make an in-your-face slam dunk, more like a nice jump shot. 2 minutes pass. I need to say something. Love you too. It's as foreign as a Spanish word I haven't learned yet, but funny enough, it comes pretty easily. I get a wink emoji in return. Just Us for Justice occupies the old Taco Bell on Magnolia Avenue, between the car wash and the cash advance place. Daddy used to take me and Seven to that Taco Bell every Friday and get us 99-cent tacos, cinnamon twists, and a soda to share. This was right after he got out of prison, when he didn't have a lot of money. He usually watched us eat. Sometimes he asked the manager, one of Mama's girlfriends, to keep an eye on us, and he went to the cash advance place next door. When I got older and discovered that presents don't just show up, I realized Daddy always went over there around our birthdays and Christmas. Mama rings the doorbell at Just Us, and Miss Ofra lets us in.
Sorry about that, she says, locking the door. It's just me here today.
Oh, Mama says. Where are your colleagues?
Some of them are at Garden Heights High doing a roundtable discussion. Others are leading a march on Carnation where Khalil was murdered.
It's weird to hear somebody say Khalil was murdered as easily as Miss Ofra does. She doesn't bite her tongue or hesitate. Short-walled cubicles take up most of the restaurant. They have almost as many posters as Seven has, but the kind Daddy would love, like Malcolm X standing next to a window holding a rifle, Huey Newton in prison with his fist up for Black Power, and photographs of the Black Panthers at rallies and giving breakfast to kids. Ms. Ofra leads us to her cubicle next to the drive-through window. It's kind of funny, too, because she has a Taco Bell cup on her desk.
Thank you so much for coming, she says. I was so happy when you called, Mrs. Carter.
Please call me Lisa. How long have you all been in this space?
Almost 2 years now. And if you're wondering, yes, we do get the occasional prankster who pulls up to the window and tells me they want a chalupa.
We laugh. The doorbell rings up front. That's probably my husband, Mama says. He was on his way. Ms. Ofra leaves, and soon Daddy's voice echoes through the office as he follows her back. He grabs a third chair from another cubicle and sets it halfway in Ms. Ofra's office and halfway in the hall. That's how small her cubicle is.
Sorry I'm late. Had to get Devante situated with Mr. Lewis.
Mr. Lewis? I ask.
Yeah. Since I'm here, I asked him to let Devante help around the shop. Mr. Lewis needs somebody to look out for his dumb behind. Snitching on live TV. You're talking about the gentleman who did the interview about the King Lords?
Miss Ofra asks.
Yeah, him, says Daddy. He owns the barbershop next to my store. Oh, wow. That interview definitely has people talking. Last I checked, it had almost 1 million views online.
I knew it.
Mr. Lewis has become a meme.
It takes a lot of guts to be as upfront as he is. I meant what I said at Khalil's funeral, Star. It was very brave of you to talk to the police.
I don't feel brave. With Malcolm X watching me on her wall, I can't lie. I'm not running my mouth on TV like Mr. Lewis.
And that's okay, Ms. Ofra says. It seemed Mr. Lewis impulsively spoke out in anger and frustration. In a case like Khalil's, I would much rather that you spoke out in a more deliberate and planned way.
She looks at Mama.
You said the DA called yesterday?
Yes. They'd like to meet with Star tomorrow.
Makes sense. The case was turned over to their office, and they're preparing to take it to a grand jury.
What does that mean? I ask.
A jury will decide if charges should be brought against Officer Cruz. And Star will have to testify to the grand jury, Daddy says.
Miss Ofra nods.
It's a bit different from a normal trial. There won't be a judge or a defense attorney present, and the DA will ask Star questions.
But what if I can't answer them all?
What do you mean? Miss Ofra says.
The gun in the car stuff. On the news, they said there may have been a gun in the car. Like, that changes everything. I honestly don't know if there was. Miss Ofra opens a folder that's on her desk, takes a piece of paper out, and pushes it toward me. It's a photograph of Khalil's black hairbrush, the one he used in the car.
That's the so-called gun, Miss Ofra explains. Officer Cruz claims he saw it in the car door, and he assumed Khalil was reaching for it. The handle was thick enough, black enough, for him to assume it was a gun. And Khalil was black enough,
Daddy adds. A hairbrush. Khalil died over a fucking hairbrush. Miss Ofra slips the photograph back in the folder.
It'll be interesting to see how his father addresses it in his interview tonight.
Hold up. Interview? I ask. Mama shifts a little in her chair. The officer's father has a television interview that's airing tonight. I glance from her to Daddy. And nobody told me?
'Cause it ain't worth talking about, baby,
Daddy says. I look at Ms. Ofra. So his dad can give his son's side to the whole world, and I can't give mine and Khalil's? He's gonna have everybody thinking 115's the victim.
Not necessarily, Ms. Ofra says. Sometimes these kinds of things backfire. And at the end of the day, the court of public opinion has no say in this. The grand jury does. If they see enough evidence, which they should, Officer Cruz will be charged and tried.
If, I repeat. A wave of awkward silence rolls in. 115's father is his voice, but I'm Khalil's. The only way people will know his side of the story is if I speak out. I look out the drive-through window at the car wash next door. Water cascades from a hose, making rainbows against the sunlight like it did 6 years ago, right before bullets took Natasha. I turn to Miss Ofra. When I was 10, I saw my other best friend get murdered in a drive-by. Funny how murdered comes out easily now.
Oh, Miss Ofra sinks back. I'm so sorry, Star.
I stare at my fingers and fumble with them. Tears well in my eyes. I've tried to forget it, but I remember everything. The shots. The look on Natasha's face. They never caught the person who did it. I guess it didn't matter enough. But it did matter. She mattered. I look at Miss Ofra, but I can barely see her for all the tears. And I want everyone to know that Khalil mattered too.
Miss Ofra blinks. A lot.
Absolutely.
She clears her throat.
I would like to represent you, Star. Pro bono, in fact.
Mama nods, and she's teary-eyed, too.
I'll do whatever I can to make sure you're heard, Star. Because just like Khalil and Natasha mattered, you matter. And your voice matters. I can start by trying to get you a television interview.
She looks at my parents,
if you're okay with that.
As long as they don't reveal her identity, yeah,
Daddy says.
That shouldn't be a problem, she says. We will absolutely make sure her privacy is protected.
A quiet buzzing comes from Daddy's way. He takes out his phone and answers. The person on the other end shouts something, but I can't make it out.
Hey, calm down, Vontae. Say that again.
The response makes Daddy stand up.
I'm coming. You call 911?
What's wrong? Mama says. He motions for us to follow him.
Stay with him, aight? We on the way.
13. Mr. Lewis's left eye is swollen shut, and blood drips onto his shirt from a slash on his cheek, but he refuses to go to the hospital. Daddy's office has become an examining room, and Mom attends to Mr. Lewis with Daddy's help. I lean against the doorway and watch. Devante stands even farther back in the store.
It took 5 of them to take me down, Mr. Lewis says. 5 of them! Against one little old man. Ain't that something?
It's really something that you're alive, I say. Snitches get stitches doesn't apply to king lords. More like snitches get graves. Mama tilts Mr. Lewis's head to look at the cut on his cheek. She's right. You're real lucky, Mr. Lewis. Don't even need stitches.
King himself gave me that one, he says. He ain't come in till them other ones got me down. Oh, punk ass. Looking like a black Michelin man.
I snort. This ain't funny, Daddy says. I told you they was gonna come after you.
And I told you I ain't scared. If this the worst they could do, they ain't did nothing.
Nah, this ain't the worst, says Daddy. They could have killed you.
I ain't the one they want dead.
He stretches his fat finger my way, but he looks beyond me at Devante.
That's the one you need to worry about. I made him hide before they came in, but King said he know you helping that boy, and he gonna kill him if you find him.
Devante backs away, his eyes wide. I swear in like 2 seconds, Daddy grabs Devante by his neck and slams him against the freezer.
What the hell you do?
Devante kicks and squirms and tries to pull Daddy's hands from his neck.
Daddy, stop!
Shut up!
His glare never leaves Devante.
I brought you in my house, and you ain't been honest about why you hiding? King wouldn't want you dead unless you did something, so what you do?
Maverick!
Mama breaks his name down real good. Let him go. He can't explain anything with you choking him. Daddy releases, and Devante bends over, gasping for air.
Don't be putting your hands on me, he says.
Or what?
Daddy taunts.
Start talking.
Man, look, it ain't a big deal. King tripping.
Is he for real? What did you do?
I ask. Devante slides onto the floor and tries to catch his breath. He blinks real fast for several seconds. His face scrunches up. Suddenly, he's bawling like a baby. I don't know anything else to do, so I sit in front of him. When Khalil would cry like that because his mama was messed up, I'd lift his head. I lift Devante's. It's okay, I say. That always worked with Khalil. It works with Devante, too. He stops crying as hard and says,
I stole about 5 G's from King.
Damn it.
Daddy groans.
What the hell, man?
I had to get my family out of here. I was gonna handle the dudes that killed Dalvin and shit. All that would do was make some GDs come after me. I was a dead man walking, straight up. I didn't want my mama and my sisters caught up in that, so I got them some bus tickets and got them out of town.
That's why we can't get your mama on the phone, Mama realizes. Tears fall around his lips.
She didn't want me coming anyway. Said I'd get them killed. Put me out the house before they left.
He looks at Daddy.
Big Mav, I'm sorry. I should have told you the other day. I did change my mind about killing them dudes, though. But now King wants me dead. Please don't take me to him. I'll do anything, please.
He bet not. Mr. Lewis limps out of Daddy's office. You help that boy, Maverick.
Daddy stares at the ceiling like he could cuss God out.
Daddy,
I plead.
Aight. Come on, Vontae.
Big Mav,
he whimpers.
I'm sorry. Please. I'm not taking you to King. But we gotta get you out of here. Now.
40 minutes later, Mama and I pull up behind Daddy and Devante in Uncle Carlos's driveway. I'm surprised Daddy knows how to get here. He never comes out here with us. Never. Holidays, birthdays, none of that. I guess he doesn't want to deal with Nana and her mouth. Mama and I get out her car as Daddy and Devante get out the truck.
This is where you're bringing him? Mama says. My brother's house?
Yeah,
Daddy says, like it's no big deal. Uncle Carlos comes from the garage, wiping oil off his hands with one of Aunt Pam's good towels. He shouldn't be home. It's the middle of a work day, and he never takes sick days. He stops wiping his hands, but the knuckles on one of them are still dark. Devante squints against the sunlight and looks around like we brought him to another planet.
Damn, Big Mal, where we at?
Where are we? Uncle Carlos corrects and offers his hand. Carlos, you must be Devante. Devante stares at his hand. No manners at all.
How you know my name?
Uncle Carlos awkwardly lets his hand fall to his side.
Maverick told me about you. We've discussed getting you out here.
Oh,
Mama says with a hollow laugh.
Maverick's discussed getting him out here.
She narrows her eyes at Daddy. I'm surprised you even knew how to get out here, Maverick. Daddy's nostrils flare.
We'll talk later. Come on, Uncle Carlos says. I'll show you your room.
Devante stares at the house, his eyes all big.
What you do to get a house like this?
Dang, you're nosy, I say. Uncle Carlos chuckles.
It's okay, Star. My wife's a surgeon, and I'm a detective.
Devante stops dead. He turns on Daddy.
What the fuck, man? You brought me to a cop? Watch your mouth, Daddy says. And I brought you to somebody who actually want to help you. A cop, though? If the homies find out, they gonna think I'm snitching.
They're not your homies if you gotta hide from them, I say. Plus, Uncle Carlos wouldn't ask you to snitch.
She's right, says Uncle Carlos. Maverick's really serious about getting you out of Garden Heights.
Mama scoffs loudly.
When he told us the situation, we wanted to help. Uncle Carlos goes on, and it sounds like you need our help.
Devante sighs.
Man, this ain't cool. Look, I'm on leave, says Uncle Carlos. You don't have to worry about me getting information out of you.
Leave? I say. That explains the sweats in the middle of the day. Why'd they put you on leave? He glances from me to Mama. And she probably doesn't know I see her shake her head real quick.
Don't worry about it, baby girl, he says, hooking his arm around me. I needed a vacation.
It's so so obvious. They put him on leave because of me. Nana meets us at the front door. Knowing her, she's been watching through the window since we got here. She has one arm folded and takes a drag of her cigarette with the other. She blows the smoke toward the ceiling while staring at Devante.
Who he supposed to be?
Devante, Uncle Carlos says. He's staying with us.
What you mean he's staying with us?
Just what I said. He got in a little trouble in Garden Heights and needs to stay here. She scoffs, and I know where Mama gets it from.
A little trouble, huh? Tell the truth, boy.
She lowers her voice and asks with suspicious, squinted eyes.
Did you kill somebody?
Mama,
my mama says.
What? I better ask before y'all have me sleeping in the house with a murderer, waking up dead.
What in the... You can't wake up dead, I say.
Little girl, you know what I mean.
She moves from the doorway.
I'll be waking up in Jesus' face trying to figure out what happened.
Like you going to heaven,
Daddy mumbles. Uncle Carlos gives Devante a tour. His room is about as big as me and Seven's rooms put together. It doesn't seem right that he only has a little backpack to put in it. And when we go to the kitchen, Uncle Carlos makes him hand that over.
There are a few rules for living here, Uncle Carlos says. One, follow the rules. Two,
he pulls the Glock from Devante's backpack.
No weapons and no drugs. I know you ain't bring that in my house, Vante,
Daddy says.
King probably got money on my head. You damn right I got a piece. Rule three, Uncle Carlos speaks over him, no cursing. I have an 8-year-old and a 3-year-old. They don't need to hear that.
'Cause they hear it from Nana enough. Ava's new favorite word is God damn it.
Rule four, Uncle Carlos says, go to school. Man, Devante groans. I already told Big Mav I can't go back to Garden High. We know, Daddy says. Once we get in touch with your mama, we'll get you enrolled in an online program. Lisa's mama is a retired teacher. She can tutor you through it so you can finish the year out.
Like hell I can,
Nana says. I don't know where she is, but I'm not surprised she's listening.
Mama, stop being nosy,
Uncle Carlos says.
Stop volunteering me for shit.
Stop cursing, he says.
Tell me what to do again and see what happens.
Uncle Carlos's face and neck go red. The doorbell rings.
Carlos, get the door,
Nana says from wherever she's hiding. He purses his lips and leaves to answer. As he comes back, I can hear him talking to somebody. Then somebody laughs. And I know that laugh because it makes me laugh.
Look who I found, Uncle Carlos says.
Chris is behind him in his white Williamson polo and khaki shorts. He has on the red and black Jordan 12s that MJ wore when he had the flu during the 97 finals. Shoot, that makes Chris finer for some reason. Or I have a Jordan fetish.
Hi.
He smiles without showing teeth. Hi. I smile too. I forget that Daddy is here and that I potentially have a big-ass problem on my hands. That only lasts about 10 seconds, though, because Daddy asks,
who are you?
Chris extends his hand to Daddy.
Christopher, sir. Nice to meet you.
Daddy gives him a twice-over.
You know my daughter or something?
Yeah. Chris stretches it kind of long and looks at me.
We both go to Williamson?
I nod. Good answer. Daddy folds his arms.
Well, do you or don't you? You sound a little unsure about that.
Mama gives Chris a quick hug. All the while, Daddy mean mugs the hell out of him. How are you doing, sweetie? She asks.
I'm fine. I didn't mean to interrupt anything. I saw your car, and Star wasn't at school today, so I wanted to check on her.
It's fine, says Mama. Tell your mom and Dad I said hello. How are they?
Hold up, Daddy says. Y'all act like this dude been around a minute.
Daddy turns to me.
Why ain't I never heard about him?
It's gonna take a hell of a lot of boldness to put myself out there for Khalil. Like, I once told my militant black daddy about my white boyfriend kind of boldness. If I can't stand up to my dad about Chris, how can I stand up for Khalil? Daddy always tells me to never bite my tongue for anyone. That includes him. So I say it. He's my boyfriend.
Boyfriend? Daddy repeats. Yeah, her boyfriend.
Nana pipes up again from wherever she is.
Hey, Chris, baby.
Chris glances around, all confused.
Hey, Ms. Montgomery.
Nana was the first to find out about Chris, thanks to her master snooping skills. She told me,
go ahead, get your swirl on, baby.
Then proceeded to tell me about all of her swirling adventures, which I didn't need to know.
The hell, Star? Daddy says. You dating a white boy? Maverick,
Mama snaps.
Calm down, Maverick, Uncle Carlos says. He's a good kid, and he treats her well. That's all that matters, isn't it? You knew?
Daddy says. He looks at me, and I don't know if that's anger or hurt in his eyes.
He knew, and I didn't?
This happens when you have two dads. One of them's bound to get hurt, and you're bound to feel like shit because of it. Let's go outside, Mama says tightly. Now. Daddy glares at Chris and follows Mama to the patio. The doors have thick glass, but I still hear her go off on him.
Come on, Devante, Uncle Carlos says. Gonna show you the basement and the laundry room.
Devante sizes Chris up.
Boyfriend, he says with a slight laugh and looks at me. I should have known you'd have a white boy.
He leaves with Uncle Carlos. What the hell that's supposed to mean? Sorry, I tell Chris. My dad shouldn't have gone off like that.
It could have been worse. He could have killed me.
True. I motion him to sit at the counter while I get us some drinks.
Who was that guy with your uncle? He asks.
Aunt Pam ain't got one soda up in here. Juice, water, and sparkling water. I bet Nana has a stash of Sprite and Coke in her room, though. Devante, I say, grabbing two apple juice boxes. He got caught up in some King Lord stuff, and Daddy brought him to live with Uncle Carlos.
Why was he looking at me like that?
Get over it, Maverick! He's white! Mama shouts on the patio. White, white, white! Chris blushes. And blushes and blushes and blushes. I hand him a juice box. That's why Devante was looking at you that way. You're white.
Okay? He asks more than says. Is this one of those black things I won't understand?
Okay, babe, real talk. If you were somebody else, I'd side-eye the shit out of you for calling it that.
Calling it what? A black thing?
Yeah.
But isn't that what it is?
Not really, I say. It's not like this kind of stuff is exclusive to black people, you know? The reasoning may be different, but that's about it. Your parents don't have a problem with us dating?
I wouldn't call it a problem, Chris says. But we did talk about it.
So it's not just a black thing then, huh?
Point made.
We sit at the counter, and I listen to his play-by-play of school today. Nobody walked out because the police were there, waiting for any drama.
Haley and Maya asked about you, he says. I told them you were sick.
They could have texted me and asked themselves.
I think they feel guilty about yesterday. Especially Haley. White guilt. He winks. I crack up. My white boyfriend talking about white guilt. Mama yells,
"And I love how you insist on getting somebody else's child out of Garden Heights, but you want ours to stay in that hellhole."
"You want them in the suburbs with all this fake shit?" Daddy says.
"If this is fake, baby, I'll take it over real any day. I'm sick of this. The kids go to school out here. I take them to church out here. Their friends are out here. We can afford to move. But you want to stay in that mess."
"'Cause at least in Garden Heights, people ain't gonna treat them like shit."
"They already do. And wait until King can't find Devante. Who do you think he's gonna look at? Us."
"I told you I'll handle that," Daddy says. "We ain't moving. It ain't even up for discussion."
"Oh, really?"
"Really."
Chris gives me a bit of a smile.
"This is awkward."
My cheeks are hot, and I'm glad I'm too brown for it to show. "Yeah. Awkward." He takes my hand and taps his fingertips against my fingertips, one at a time. He laces his fingers through mine, and we let our arms swing together in the space between us. Daddy comes in and slams the door behind him. He zeroes straight in on our joined hands. Chris doesn't let go. Point for my boyfriend.
"We'll talk later, Star."
Daddy marches out.
"If this were a rom-com," Chris says, "you'd be Zoe Saldana, and I'd be Ashton Kutcher."
"Huh?"
He sips his juice.
"This old movie, Guess Who?
I caught it when I had the flu a few weeks ago. Zoe Saldana dated Ashton Kutcher. Her dad didn't like that she was seeing a white guy. That's us." "Except this isn't funny," I say.
"It can be."
"Nah. What's funny, though, is that you watched a rom-com."
"Hey," he cries, "it was hilarious. More of a comedy than a rom-com. Bernie Mac was her dad. That guy was hilarious, one of the kings of comedy. I don't think it can be called a rom-com simply because he was in it."
"Okay, you get points for knowing Bernie Mac and that he was a king of comedy."
"Everyone should know that."
"True, but you don't get a pass. It was still a rom-com. I won't tell anyone, though." I lean over to kiss his cheek, but he moves his head, giving me no choice but to kiss him on the mouth. Soon, we're making out, right there in my uncle's kitchen.
"Hem, hem!"
Somebody clears their throat. Chris and I separate so fast. I thought embarrassment was having my boyfriend hear my parents argue. Nope. Embarrassment is having my mom walk in on me and Chris making out. Again. "Don't y'all think y'all should let each other breathe?" she says. Chris blushes down to his Adam's apple.
"I should go."
He leaves with a quick goodbye to Mama. She raises her eyebrows at me. "Are you taking your birth control pills?"
"Mommy!"
"Answer my question, are you?"
"Yes,"
I groan, putting my face on the countertop. "When was your last cycle?"
"Oh, my Lord."
I lift my head and flash the fakest of fake smiles. "We're fine. Promise."
"Y'all got some nerve. Your daddy was barely out the driveway and y'all slobbering all over each other. You know how Maverick is."
"Are we staying out here tonight?" The question catches her off guard. "Why would you think that?" "Because you and Daddy had a disagreement, that's all."
"A disagreement the whole neighborhood heard? Plus one the other night."
"Star, we're okay. Don't worry about it. Your father's being your father." Outside, somebody honks his car horn a bunch of times. Mama rolls her eyes.
"Speaking of your father,
I guess Mr. I'm Gonna Slam Doors needs me to move my car so he can leave. She shakes her head and heads toward the front. I throw Chris's juice away and search the cabinets. Aunt Pam may be picky when it comes to drinks, but she always buys good snacks, and my stomach is talking. I get some graham crackers and slather peanut butter on them. So good. Devante comes in the kitchen.
Can't believe you dating a white boy.
He sits next to me and steals a graham cracker sandwich.
A wigger at that.
Excuse you? I say, with a mouth full of peanut butter. He is not a wigger.
Please, dude wearing J's.
White boys wear Converse and Vans, not no J's, unless they trying to be black. Really? My bad. I didn't know shoes determined somebody's race. He can't say anything to that, like I thought.
What you see in him anyway, for real? All them dudes in Garden Heights who would get with you in a second and you looking at Justin Bieber?
I point in his face. Don't call him that. And what dudes? Nobody in Garden Heights is checking for me. Hardly anybody knows my name. Hell, even you called me Big Mav's daughter who work in the store.
Cause you don't come around, he says. I ain't never seen you at a party, nothing.
Without thinking, I say, you mean parties where people get shot at? And as soon as it leaves my mouth, I feel like shit. Oh my God, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. He stares at the countertop.
It's cool. Don't worry about it.
We quietly nibble on graham crackers. I say. The silence is brutal. Uncle Carlos and Aunt Pam are cool. I think you'll like it here. He bites another graham cracker. They can be corny sometimes, but they're sweet. They'll look out for you. Knowing Aunt Pam, she'll treat you like Ava and Daniel. Uncle Carlos will probably be tougher. If you follow the rules, you'll be okay.
Khalil talked about you sometimes,
Devante says.
Huh? You said nobody knows you, but Khalil talked about you. I ain't know you was Big Mav's daughter who... I ain't know that was you, he says, but he talked about his friend Star. He said you were the coolest girl he knew.
Some peanut butter gets stuck in my throat, but it's not the only reason I swallow. How did you know? Oh, yeah. Both of y'all were king lords. I swear to God, whenever I think about Khalil falling into that life, it's like watching him die all over again. Yeah, Khalil matters, and not the stuff he did, but I can't lie and say it doesn't bother me, or it's not disappointing. He knew better.
Devante says, Khalil wasn't a king lord, Star.
But at the funeral, King put the bandana on him.
To save face, Devante says. He tried to get Khalil to join, but Khalil said nah. Then a cop killed him, so, you know, all the homies riding for him now. King not about to admit that Khalil turned him down, so he got folks thinking that Khalil repped King Lords.
Wait, I say, how do you know he turned King down?
Khalil told me in the park one day. We was posted up.
So y'all sold drugs together?
Yeah. For King.
Oh.
He didn't want to sell drugs, Star.
Devante says.
Nobody really want to do that shit. Khalil ain't have much of a choice, though.
Yeah, he did. I say thickly.
No, he didn't. Look, his mama stole some shit from King. King wanted her dead. Khalil found out and started selling to pay the debt.
What?
Yeah, that's the only reason he started doing that shit. Trying to save her.
I can't believe it. Then again, I can. That was classic Khalil. No matter what his mama did, he was still her knight, and he was still gonna protect her. This is worse than denying him. I thought the worst of him. Like everybody else.
Don't be mad at him, Devante says. And it's funny because I can hear Khalil asking me not to be mad too.
I'm not, I sigh.
Okay, I was a little mad. I just hate how he's being called a thug and shit when people don't know the whole story. You said it, he wasn't a gangbanger. And if everybody knew why he sold drugs, then they wouldn't think he was a thug, like me.
Oh, damn.
I didn't mean...
It's cool, he says. I get it. I guess I am a thug. I don't know, I did what I had to do. King Lords was the closest thing me and Dalvin had to a family.
But your mama, I say, and your sisters...
They couldn't look out for us like King Lords do, he says. Me and Dalvin looked out for them. With King Lords, we had a whole bunch of folks who had our backs no matter what. They bought us clothes and shit our mama couldn't afford and always made sure we ate.
He looks at the counter.
It was just cool to have somebody take care of us for a change, instead of the other way around.
Oh, a shitty response. I know.
Like I said, nobody likes selling drugs, he says. I hated that shit, for real. But I hated seeing my mama and my sisters go hungry, you know?
I don't know. I've never had to know. My parents made sure of that.
You got it good, then, he says. I'm sorry they talking about Khalil like that, though. He really was a good dude. Hopefully one day they can find out the truth.
Yeah, I say quietly. Devante. Khalil. Neither one of them thought they had much of a choice. If I were them, I'm not sure I'd make a much better one. Guess that makes me a thug, too. I'm going for a walk, I say, getting up. My head's all over the place. You can have the rest of the graham crackers and peanut butter. I leave. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know much of anything anymore. 14. I end up at Maya's house. Truth be told, that's the farthest I can go in Uncle Carlos's neighborhood before the houses start looking the same. It's that weird time between day and night, when the sky looks like it's on fire and mosquitoes are on the hunt. All of the lights at the Yang house are already on, which is a lot of lights. Their house is big enough for me and my family to live with them and have a little wiggle room. There's a blue Infiniti coupe with a dented bumper in the circular driveway. Haley can't drive for shit. No lie, it stings a little knowing they hang out without me. That's what happens when you live so far away from your friends. I can't get mad about it. Jealous, maybe, not mad. That protest shit, though? Now that makes me mad. Mad enough to ring the doorbell. Besides, I told Maya the three of us could talk. So fine. We'll talk. Mrs. Yang answers, her Bluetooth headset around her neck.
Star! She beams and hugs me. So good to see you. How is everyone?
Good, I say. She announces my arrival to Maya and lets me in. The aroma of Mrs. Yang's seafood lasagna greets me in the foyer. I hope it's not a bad time, I say.
Not at all, sweetie. Maya's upstairs. Haley, too. You're more than welcome to join us for dinner.
No, George, I wasn't talking to you, she says into her headset, then mouths at me, my assistant, and rolls her eyes a little.
I smile and take off my Nike Dunks. In the Yang house, shoe removal is part Chinese tradition, part Mrs. Yang likes people to be comfy. Maya races down the stairs wearing an oversized t-shirt and basketball shorts that almost hang to her ankles.
Star!
She reaches the bottom, and there's this awkward moment where her arms are out like she wants to hug me, but she starts lowering them. I hug her anyway. It's been a while since I got a good Maya hug. Her hair smells like citrus, and she hugs all tight and motherly. Maya leads me to her bedroom. White Christmas lights hang from the ceiling. There's a shelf for video games, Adventure Time memorabilia all around, and Haley in a beanbag chair, concentrating on the basketball player she's controlling on Maya's flat screen.
"Look who's here, Hales,"
Maya says. Haley glances up at me.
"Hey."
"Hey."
"It's awkward central in here."
I step over an empty Sprite can and a bag of Doritos and sit in the other beanbag chair. Maya closes her door. An old-school poster of Michael Jordan in his famous Jumpman pose is on the back. Maya belly flops onto her bed and grabs a controller off the floor.
"You want to join in, Star?"
"Yeah, sure." She hands me a third controller and we start a new game. The three of us against a computer-controlled team. It's a lot like when we play in real life, a combination of rhythm, chemistry, and skill. But the awkwardness in the room is so thick it's hard to ignore. They keep glancing at me. I keep my eyes on the screen. The animated crowd cheers as Haley's player makes a three-pointer. "Nice shot," I say.
"Okay, cut the crap."
Haley grabs the TV remote and flicks the game off, turning to a detective show instead.
"Why are you mad at us?"
"Why did you protest?" "Since she wants to cut the crap, may as well get right to it."
"Because," she says, like that's reason enough. "I don't see what the big deal is, Star. You said you didn't know him."
"Why does that make a difference?"
"Isn't a protest a good thing?"
"Not if you're only doing it to cut class."
"So you want us to apologize for it, even though everybody else did it too?"
Haley asks. "Just because everyone else did it doesn't mean it's okay." Shit, I sound like my mother.
"Guys, stop," Maya says. "Haley, if Star wants us to apologize, fine. We can apologize. Star, I'm sorry for protesting. It was stupid to use a tragedy just to get out of class."
We look at Haley. She sits back and folds her arms.
"I'm not apologizing when I didn't do anything wrong. If anything, she should apologize for accusing me of being racist last week."
"Wow," I say. "One thing that irks the hell out of me about Haley? The way she can turn an argument around and make herself the victim. She's a master at this shit. I used to fall for it, but now?"
"I'm not apologizing for what I felt," I say.
"I don't care what your intention was, Haley. That fried chicken comment felt racist to me."
"Fine," she says. "Just like I felt it was fine to protest. Since I won't apologize for what I felt and you won't apologize for what you felt, I guess we'll just watch TV."
"Fine," I say. Maya grunts like it's taking everything in her not to choke us.
"You know what? If you two want to be this stubborn, fine."
Maya flicks through channels. Haley does that BS move where you look at someone out the corner of your eye, but you don't want them to know that you care enough to look, so you avert your eyes. At this point, it's whatever. I thought I came to talk, but yeah, I really want an apology. I look at TV. A singing competition. A reality show. 1:15, a celebrity dance. "Wait, back up, I tell Maya. She flicks through the channels, and when he appears again, I say, "Right there." I've pictured his face so much. Actually seeing it again is different. My memory is pretty spot on. A thin, jagged scar above his lip, bursts of freckles that cover his face and neck. My stomach churns and my skin crawls, and I want to get away from 1:15. My instinct doesn't care that it's a photograph being shown on TV. A silver cross pendant hangs from his neck, like he's saying Jesus endorses what he did. We must believe in a different Jesus. What looks like an older version of him appears on the screen,
but this man doesn't have the scar on his lip, and there are more wrinkles on his neck than freckles. He has white hair, although there's still some streaks of brown in it.
"My son was afraid for his life," he says. "He only wanted to get home to his wife and kids."
Pictures flash on the screen. 115 smiles with his arms draped around a blurred-out woman. He's on a fishing trip with two small, blurred-out children. They show him with a smiley golden retriever, with his pastor and some fellow deacons who are all blurred out, and then in his police uniform. "Officer Brian Cruz Jr. has been on the force for 16 years, the voiceover says, and more pics of him as a cop are shown. He's been a cop for as long as Khalil was alive, and I wonder if in some sick twist of fate, Khalil was only born for this man to kill.
A majority of those years have been spent serving in Garden Heights, the voiceover continues, a neighborhood notorious for gangs and drug dealers.
I tense as footage of my neighborhood, my home, is shown. It's like they picked the worst parts, the drug addicts roaming the streets, the broken-down Cedar Grove projects, gangbangers flashing signs, bodies on the sidewalks with white sheets over them. What about Mrs. Rooks and her cakes? Or Mr. Lewis and his haircuts? Mr. Rubin? The clinic? My family? Me? I feel Haley's and Maya's eyes on me. I can't look at them.
"My son loved working in the neighborhood," 115's father claims. "He always wanted to make a difference in the lives there."
Funny. Slave masters thought they were making a difference in black people's lives, too, saving them from their wild African ways. Same shit, different century. I wish people like them would stop thinking that people like me need saving. 115 Senior talks about his son's life before the shooting, how he was a good kid who never got into trouble, always wanted to help others. A lot like Khalil. But then he talks about the stuff 115 did that Khalil will never get to do. Like go to college, get married, have a family. The interviewer asks about that night.
"Apparently, Brian pulled the kid over because he had a broken taillight and was speeding."
Khalil wasn't speeding.
"He told me, 'Pop, soon as I pulled him over, I had a bad feeling,'" says 115 Senior.
"Why is that?" the interviewer asks.
"He said the kid and his friend immediately started cursing him out."
"We never cursed."
"And they kept glancing at each other, like they were up to something. Brian says that's when he got scared, because they could have taken him down if they teamed up."
"I couldn't have taken anyone down. I was too afraid. He makes us sound like we're superhumans. We're kids."
"No matter how afraid he is, my son's still gonna do his job," he says, and that's all he set out to do that night. There have been reports that Khalil Harris was unarmed when the incident took place, the interviewer says. "Has your son told you why he made the decision to shoot?" "Brian says he had his back to the kid, and he heard the kid say, 'I'm gonna show your ass today.'"
"No, no, no. Khalil asked if I was okay."
"Brian turned around and saw something in the car door. He thought it was a gun."
"It was a hairbrush." His lips quiver. My body shakes. He covers his mouth to hold back a sob. I cover mine to keep from puking.
"Brian's a good boy," he says in tears. "He only wanted to get home to his family, and people are making him out to be a monster."
"That's all Khalil and I wanted, and you're making us out to be monsters." I can't breathe. Like I'm drowning in the tears I refuse to shed, I won't give 115 or his father the satisfaction of crying. Tonight, they shot me too, more than once, and killed a part of me. Unfortunately for them, it's the part that felt any hesitation about speaking out.
How has your son's life changed since this happened? The interviewer asks.
All of our lives have been hell, honestly, his father claims. Brian's a people person, but now he's afraid to go out in public, even for something as simple as getting a gallon of milk. There have been threats on his life, our family's lives. His wife had to quit her job. He's even been attacked by fellow officers.
Physically or verbally? The interviewer asks.
Both, he says.
It hits me. Uncle Carlos's bruised knuckles.
This is awful, Haley says. That poor family.
She's looking at 115 Senior with sympathy that belongs to Brenda and Ms. Rosalie.
I blink several times.
What? His son lost everything because he was trying to do his job and protect himself. His life matters too, you know?
I cannot right now. I can't.
I stand up or otherwise I will say or do something really stupid, like punch her.
I need to.
Yeah.
I say all that I can and start for the door, but Maya grabs the tail of my cardigan.
Whoa, whoa. You guys haven't worked this out yet, she says.
Maya, I say, as calmly as possible, please let me go. I cannot talk to her.
Did you not hear what she said?
Are you serious right now? Haley asks. What's wrong with saying his life matters too?
His life always matters more.
My voice is gruff and my throat is tight.
That's the problem.
Star, Star, Maya says, trying to catch my eye. I look at her. What's going on? You're Harry in Order of the Phoenix angry lately.
Thank you, Haley says. She's been in bitch mode for weeks, but wants to blame me.
Excuse you? There's a knock on the door.
Girls, is everything okay?
Mrs. Yang asks.
We're fine, Mom. Video game stuff.
Maya looks at me and lowers her voice. Please sit down. Please. I sit on her bed. Commercials replace 115 Senior on the TV and fill in the gap of silence we've created. I blurt out,
why did you unfollow my Tumblr?
Haley turns toward me.
What?
You unfollowed my Tumblr.
Why?
She glances at Maya quickly, but I notice, and goes,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Cut the bullshit, Haley. You unfollowed me months ago.
Why?
She doesn't say anything. I swallow.
Is it because of the Emmett Till picture?
Oh my God, she says, standing up. Here we go again. I am not gonna stay here and let you accuse me of something.
Star, you don't text me anymore, I say. You freaked out about that picture.
Do you hear her? Haley says to Maya.
Once again, calling me racist.
I'm not calling you anything. I'm asking a question and giving you examples.
You're insinuating.
I never even mentioned race.
Silence comes between us.
Haley shakes her head. Her lips are thin. Unbelievable. She grabs her jacket off Maya's bed and starts for the door. She stops, and her back is to me.
You want to really know why I unfollowed you, Star? Because I don't know who the hell you are anymore.
She slams the door on her way out. The news program returns on the television. They show footage of protests all over the country, not just in Garden Heights. Hopefully none of them used Khalil's death to skip class or work. Out of nowhere, Maya says,
that's not why.
She's staring at her closed door, her shoulders a bit stiff.
Huh? I say.
She's lying, Maya says. That's not why she unfollowed you. She said she didn't want to see that shit on her dashboard.
I figured. That Emmett Till picture, right?
No. All
The black stuff, she called it. The petitions, the Black Panther pictures, that post on those four little girls who were killed in that church, the stuff about that Marcus Garvey guy, the one about those Black Panthers who were shot by the government. Fred Hampton and Bobby Hutton, I say. Yeah, them. Wow. She's been paying attention. Why didn't you tell me? She stares at her plush fin on the floor. I hoped she'd change her mind before you found out. I should have known better, though. It's not like that's the first fucked up thing she's said. What are you talking about? Maya swallows hard. Do you remember that time she asked if my family ate a cat for Thanksgiving?
What? When?
Her eyes are glossy. Freshman year. First period. Mrs. Edwards' biology class. We'd just gotten back from Thanksgiving break. Class hadn't started yet, and we were talking about what we did for Thanksgiving. I told you guys my grandparents visited, and it was their first time celebrating Thanksgiving. Haley asked if we ate a cat, because we're Chinese. Holy shit. I'm racking my brain right now. Freshman year is so close to middle school. There's a huge possibility I said or did something extremely stupid. I'm afraid to know, but I ask, what did I say? Nothing. You had this look on your face like you couldn't believe she said that. She claimed it was a joke and laughed. I laughed, and then you laughed. Maya blinks a lot. I only laughed because I thought I was supposed to. I felt like shit the rest of the week. Oh, yeah. I feel like shit right now. I can't believe I let Haley say that. Or has she always joked like that? Did I always laugh because I thought I had to? That's the problem. We let people say stuff, and they say it so much that it becomes okay to them and normal for us. What's the point of having a voice if you're going to be silent in those moments you shouldn't be? Maya, I say. Yeah? We can't let her get away with saying stuff like that again. Okay? She cracks a smile. A minority alliance?
Hell yeah, I say. And we laugh.
All right, deal. A game of NBA 2K15 later, I whooped Maya's butt, I'm walking back to Uncle Carlos's house with a foil-wrapped plate of seafood lasagna. Mrs. Yang never lets me leave empty-handed, and I never turn down food. Iron street lamps line the sidewalks, and I see Uncle Carlos from a few houses down, sitting on his front steps in the dark. He's chugging back something, and as I get closer, I can see the Heineken. I put my plate on the steps and sit beside him.
You better not have been at your little boyfriend's house, he says.
Lord. Chris is always Lil to him, and they're almost the same height. No, I was at Maya's. I stretch my legs forward and yawn. It's been a long-ass day.
I can't believe you're drinking,
I say through my yawn.
I'm not drinking. It's one beer.
Is that what Nana said? He cuts me a look.
Star.
Uncle Carlos, I say, as firmly. We battle it out, hard stare versus hard stare. He sets the beer down. Here's the thing. Nana's an alcoholic. She's not as bad as she used to be. But all it takes is one hard drink, and she's the other Nana. I've heard stories of her drunken rages from back in the day. She'd blame Mama and Uncle Carlos that their daddy went back to his wife and other kids. She'd lock them out the house, cuss at them, all kinds of stuff. So no, one beer isn't one beer to Uncle Carlos, who's always been anti-alcohol.
Sorry,
he says.
It's one of those nights.
You saw the interview, didn't you? I ask.
Yeah, I was hoping you didn't.
I did. Did my mom see?
Oh, yeah, she saw it. So did Pam and your grandma. I've never been in a room with so many pissed off women in my life.
He looks at me.
How are you dealing with it?
I shrug. Yeah, I'm pissed. But honestly, I expected his dad to make him the victim.
I did too.
He rests his cheek in his palm, his elbow propped on his knee. It's not too dark on the steps. I see the bruising on his hand fine. So, I say, patting my knees. On leave, huh? He looks at me like he's trying to figure out what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Silence. Did you fight him, Uncle Carlos?
He straightens up. No, I had a discussion with him.
You mean your fist talked to his eye? Did he say something about me?
He pointed his gun at you. That was more than enough.
His voice has a foreign edge to it. It's totally inappropriate, but I laugh. I have to hold my side, I laugh so hard.
What's so funny? He cries.
Uncle Carlos, you punched somebody.
Hey, I'm from Garden Heights. I know how to fight. I can get down.
I'm hollering right now.
It's not funny, he says. I shouldn't have lost my cool like that. It was unprofessional. Now I've set a bad example for you.
Yeah, you have, Muhammad Ali. I'm still laughing. Now he's laughing.
Hush, he says.
Our laughter dies down, and it's real quiet out here. Nothing to do but look at the sky and all the stars. There's so many of them tonight. It's possible that I don't notice them at home because of all the other stuff. Sometimes it's hard to believe Garden Heights and Riverton Hills share the same sky.
You remember what I used to tell you? Uncle Carlos says.
I scoot closer to him. That I'm not named after the stars, but the stars are named after me? You were really trying to give me a big head, huh? He chuckles.
No. I wanted you to know how special you are.
Special or not, you shouldn't have risked your job for me. You love your job.
But I love you more. You're one reason I even became a cop, baby girl. Because I love you and all those folks in the neighborhood.
I know. That's why I don't want you to risk it. We need the ones like you.
The ones like me.
He gives a hollow laugh.
You know, I got pissed listening to that man talk about you and Khalil like that. But it made me consider the comments I made about Khalil that night in your parents' kitchen.
What comments?
I know you were eavesdropping, Star. Don't act brand new.
I smirk. Uncle Carlos said brand new. You mean when you called Khalil a drug dealer? He nods.
Even if he was, I knew that boy. Watched him grow up with you. He was more than any bad decision he made, he says. I hate that I let myself fall into that mindset of trying to rationalize his death. And at the end of the day, you don't kill someone for opening a car door. If you do, you shouldn't be a cop.
I tear up. It's good to hear my parents and Miss Ofra say that, or see all the protesters shout about it. From my uncle, the cop, though, it's a relief, even if it makes everything hurt a little more.
I told Brian that, he says, looking at his knuckles, after I clocked him. Told the chief, too. Actually, I think I screamed it loud enough for everybody in the precinct to hear. It doesn't take away from what I did, though. I dropped the ball on Khalil.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did, he says. I knew him. Knew his family situation. After he stopped coming around with you, he was out of sight and out of mind to me. And there's no excuse for that.
There's no excuse for me either. I think all of us feel like that, I mutter. That's one reason Daddy's determined to help Devante.
Yeah,
he says.
Me too.
I look at all the stars again. Daddy says he named me Star because I was his light in the darkness. I need some light in my own darkness right about now.
I wouldn't have killed Khalil, by the way,
Uncle Carlos says.
I don't know a lot of stuff, but I do know that.
My eyes sting, and my throat tightens. I've turned into such a damn crybaby. I snuggle closer to Uncle Carlos and hope it says everything I can't.